You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It is the Anfield Wrap after Liverpool have beaten Manchester United, the famous Manchester United, by seven. That is seven, rhymes with heaven, goals to nil. We are in association with Access Sport and we're delighted to be. To be clear, Access Sport, we've been working with them now since the start of January, and they do fantastic stuff getting young people aged between 16 and 18 into all different types of employment using sport in the first place. This is National Careers Week. Absolutely huge. Lissandro Martinez might be looking for one at some point soon. You can click through to all sorts of stuff from the Access Sports website. If you go to accesssports.ac.uk/TAW, you can see stuff there. Just to be really clear, they've sent me a list of things that they've got in front of them at the minute, with River Juniors Academy, Future Gym Sports, all sorts of bits and pieces of ways to find careers right the way across the country. We're in Kirby, we're in Hyde, we're in Norwich, we're in Sheffield. So wherever you're listening to this, if you go to accesssports.ac.uk/TAW, there is stuff there too. And coming up, we will tweet it out, there is an open day about getting into sports media. Sports media, it's a difficult career. It's very, very fraught. You've got to get up early in the morning, John Gibbons. But there are times when it gets to be rewarding. So if you're interested in sports media, the Anfield app will be working with Access as well in a number of different ways across the rest of the year. So if you go to accesssports.ac.uk/TAW, you can find out about a career in sports media. John Gibbons, how is your career in sports media going today?
Good. Yeah, it's buoyant.
We'll just describe it as buoyant.
Yeah, it is.
So you're not meant to be on this show. You've subbed in for Neil Docking, who's turning up late. At some point, Docking is going to arrive. He's going to have to get you. He's going to have to evict you out of that seat. He best bring the bailiffs.
I know. I've got a bit of a taste for it now. I'm seeing these lovely smiling faces.
It's Mel Stewart and Ian Ryan.
The big hitters.
It doesn't get bigger. It
does not get bigger. We've got a crowd in.
Yeah.
A bigger crowd than what United finished with at the end of the game.
Yeah.
More in our end than theirs. It is fair to say. But it'll be nice to hear Neil Docking. He'll have some fantastic things to say.
I'm sure he will. He'll have some absolutely fantastic things to say. How can you not have fantastic things to say? John, I'm going to make the most of you while I've got you. The thing about what a day is, from nowhere really in a way, I had levels of confidence going into the game, bit wobbly after I saw the team sheet, and then seeing the sort of game play out in front of me. As soon as it went 1-0, I thought we're going to be absolutely fine here. But it becomes another historic day. This is a record defeat for Manchester United. You just don't get them. You know, I've seen United teams win league titles playing against abject Liverpool teams at Old Trafford. We never got beat 7-0. It just doesn't happen. And yet again, with Jurgen Klopp as Liverpool manager, the unthinkable occurs.
It is incredible. And here is Mr. Neil Docking. I'm going to make this point, Neil. You're going to listen and then you're going to swap in. It is. I mean, I remember the 4-1 at Old Trafford, and that felt like you never see anything like this. You know, it felt absolutely huge. I think, you know, for that team to go there and do that, but it's that's a free goal swing. It's not a 7-1. And like you say, Neil, what this manager has done, you know, to this team is make them believe that the impossible is possible, and so they go and do these things. And I think there was a determination amongst all the players to sort of make the most of it and keep going. I don't think they'll have necessarily enjoyed all this chat about Manchester United, and there was a now quite funny article in The Guardian on Saturday saying that they've overtaken us, and there was a bit of sort of that talk. I mean, I don't know if Mo Salah subscribes to The Guardian.
He might not have the app on his phone.
No, but...
He should consider it, though, for a career in sports media.
but these sorts of chats were going on, and I'm sure players and management will have been aware of them, and they were determined to make a bit of a statement with the performance. I don't think they quite expected to make that statement with the results, but they did, and they just kept going, and that was the best thing about it, because it is always felt like, you know, the 5-0 at Old Trafford is tinged with a bit where we declared effectively. They would have none of it. I was talking to Craig upstairs about, or someone upstairs, some lovely smiley face we have in the office upstairs, was about six when they kicked off at 6-0, and we just ran at them like straight away. Yeah. Milner was
doing the hand like that, wasn't he, before kickoff? Like, come on, boys.
It was like the NFL. It was like, yeah, you know, they kicked it and then we all just sort of surged on them, and you just thought, yeah, this right.
Absolutely. That'll do for John Gibbons. Neil Docking is going to be subbed in.
Just a quick break from the free show. You'll be back with them in a couple of minutes. Just wanting to let you know about a couple of things. First of all, we are going over to North America. We're bringing our live shows back over to North America. We absolutely can't wait. It's been a while since we've been over, but we're really excited to be doing 6 shows in 6 nights across the March international break. So we're starting off in Toronto, and then we go to Detroit, Boston, New York, Philadelphia, and Washington, D.C. So 6 shows in 6 nights. We're really excited. Tickets are selling fast. In fact, 2 of those shows are already sold out, and I know there's a couple more where there's only a few tickets left. So do get your tickets quickly if you want to come and join us. It is a fantastic celebration of Liverpool Football Club. I'm sure there'll be some chat on Liverpool 7, Manchester United 0 as well, and just a really good party. We're really looking forward to getting back out there, seeing some old friends and making loads of new ones as well. So if you want to come along, it is theanfieldwrap.com/TAW live. That is theanfieldwrap.com/TAW live, and get your tickets and come and join the party. Secondly, we just wanted to alert you to some of the great post-match content there was yesterday. Listen, it's the easiest job in the world after Liverpool had beaten Manchester United 7-0, with some really great stuff from the right by Anfield. So we did the post-match pint, which is the video show from Sam Dodd's bar, which is right next to the Sandon, stones throw away from Anfield. And then a little bit down the road at the Glenbuck, we did the post-match show, which is our audio version, which I hosted. It was a raucous party atmosphere in the Glenbuck, as you can imagine, but we did a fantastic audio show, and we really want to show a bit of it to you, really. So we're going to do a little clip. So this is 2 minutes from the post-match show. If you do want more, make sure you subscribe. Just go to theanfieldwrap.com/subscribe or download the app to get stuck in. But here's a little bit of a clip, and then back to the boys on the main free show. Up the Reds.
Like, they lost the Reds on 2-0.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
Martinez trying to get sent off on 2-0. Fernandez trying to get sent off on 3-0. And then they were chasing shadows. And Liverpool...
I've heard he asked to come off. And the manager said, fuck off.
Did he?
I heard that. Fernandez.
They're chasing shadows all over the pitch, and Liverpool revelled in it. And it was almost like Liverpool were like making a point here. Everyone's roped us off. Yeah, we've had a bad season. What? This is how you fucking play footy, lads. Yeah. What, you think this ground shit? You think we're finished? And to a man, they were fucking ridiculous. And I don't know, it's just so like poetic. Like, you know, the front three being the best front three ever. And then they sort of...
They all scored.
This front three scored. All scored two.
All four of the front three scored. Yeah. Yeah.
And then Bobby comes in, who sort of started this, like, really emotional final sort of stamp on that team that was... Is announcing that he's leaving. Everyone's been a big outpouring. And then, like, I don't know, there's, like, a passing at the baton, and then you just had the... You had the final flourish of Bobby scoring the 7th. Fucking, it was perfect.
It's more wonderful, Mo Stewart, in that it comes from nowhere, but then you go, no, it doesn't come from nowhere. This is us. This is the us that we're used to. And that's one of the things that just makes it so wonderful.
It is. It's brilliant. And I think if anyone was going to deliver Manchester United their reality check, I'm so very pleased it was us. And I think the psychology of both teams really played a part in the game, because as soon as we scored two early goals in the second half, the 2 and 3. They started remembering all of the previous whoopings they've taken on that pitch. And we started remembering all of the whoopings we've given them on that pitch. And you could see the energy drain from them and grow into us. And, I mean, you mentioned about how we declared at Old Trafford. Man United declared. Like, they gave up. They gave up in a way that I've never seen us. And it's weird because for some reason, it reminded me of our game at Old Trafford earlier this season. And I went back and I watched all our post-match stuff. And we were all talking about how that effort wasn't the effort required for a fixture like this. How dare they go into a game like this and play like that? We lost 2-1. They lost 7-0. And like, as much as we were complaining about Van Dijk doing this at Old Trafford, like, no one stopped. No one stopped in the way that Fernandes did. No one was begging to be substituted in the way that Bruno Fernandes does. And yes, we're going to go on and talk about Liverpool players wonderfully because this is a Liverpool podcast and we all want to accentuate the positive and what it means for us. I think that this could be the result that kills all the momentum that they've built up for this whole season. And again, I'm so very pleased that it was us that did it.
The performance wasn't exactly exemplary first half, Ian, but I always felt we were working some stuff out before your very eyes in there. But the goals either side of half-time just changed the game. But I think half-time does too, because there was space. The way they played all season, there's been space. United, I'm intrigued by who they allow to cheat, who they don't allow to cheat. They've had a bit of a broken team. He does a thing there, manager, where he flips Casemiro and Fred. Fred normally plays left-hand side of the midfield too, and he moves Casemiro there, which, you know, doesn't make a ton of sense to me. He does Rashford through the middle rather than putting him on the left. I think he's trying to work a lot out. And I think we come to terms with that at half-time and then go, this is where the room is, boys. I mean, often it was just Andy Robertson, but this is where the room is, boys. Go and fill your boots.
Yeah, I think they're quite an interesting team, United. We spoke on the kind of pre-match show towards the end of last week about whether they are maybe slightly overhyped. And I think it's easy to have that conversation now, given you just pumped them for seven. But I think they were always a team, I thought, that I was more impressed with them at the end of games than during games. I never sat there during the game and thought, these are great. But at the end of the game, when they've got the job done, you go, well, they've done something right, so they must be half decent. But I did always feel you could get at them. And Liverpool, my God, they get at them yesterday. And I think you're right. The first half was pretty even. I've watched some of it back since, and I've seen the comments from Carragher and Neville and people like that. And I think it's fair to say it was quite even. Liverpool start quite well without really testing De Gea. And they stay in the game, and they're fine. And they have probably the best two chances. You know, Rashford should do better. You could argue Fernandes with the header should do better. But then the goal changes everything, I think, from a psychological point of view. And it's a brilliant goal. You know, the ball by Robertson. And at times, I think Robertson, like a lot of people this season, has not quite been there in terms of the quality he's demonstrated over, you know, lots of other years. But what a ball. The manager talks about it after the game. It's a hell of a ball. And the finish from Gakpo, by the way. And I think, again, the manager deserves some credit because it would have been easy maybe to go with Jota. Now, maybe Jota's not there in terms of being able to go again from a starting point of view. But he played them against Palace and played them against Wolves. And you're thinking, well, is he building up to trying to give him 90 maybe? But he goes with Gakpo again. And I thought Gakpo was excellent through the 90. Nunes has a bit of a funny game because I think he's actually not great first half. And I've listened to some of the post-match stuff and people saying, well, maybe there was an option to take him off there. I wouldn't have done that. And obviously, you know, he pays the manager back by coming out and having a really, really good second half. But from 1 to 11, Neil, in old money terms, Liverpool were fantastic.
We'll go through them 1 to 11 in a minute or two, Neil. Let's, you know, be clear about this. Liverpool, they get through the bit in the game, 25 to 35. That maybe offers United a little bit of encouragement by just sticking to the task, which is what they haven't been doing. And then they absolutely come alive. It is a riotous second half. 6 goals in 45 minutes. That averages a goal every 9 minutes, which is quite the way to play football, it's worth saying. It became an absolute party, and United played their part by just sort of dissolving before your very eyes, which was remarkably pleasing too. But Liverpool make it so.
Yeah, I mean, not even Merseyrail's malfunctioning trains could prevent me from being here today.
In a chipper mood as well.
New train going at 5 mph, as much use as Martinez at Anfield. It was astonishing, is the word I just keep thinking. It was astonishing that second half. It reminded me in some ways of the Arsenal 5-1. But, you know, flipped on its head, obviously, yeah. a second-half riot.
Roma as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And the speed with which we took the game away from them. And it's interesting because a few weeks ago against Real Madrid, it felt like we're in a similar situation, 2 goals up, where could we take this game away from the opposition? Obviously, they're a far greater side than Manchester United, far more resilience. But The first half's an even contest, really. As you say, they've had a couple of really good opportunities. I thought we were a little unfortunate with a couple of ours, whereas I think it is Martinez makes a stop, makes a block on Nunes, which is a big opportunity. There was one where Robertson flashed it wide. And I agree with some of the points that have been made. I thought that occasionally Nunes was hurting us because he wasn't holding the ball up well enough in the first half. He was giving it away a few too many times. And I was fearing that they would hit us on the counter because I've seen a lot of that from them recently. But I've also seen United games recently where they've been woeful and they've come away with points. I saw them against Leicester where for a good 20 minutes at Old Trafford they were absolutely getting marmalised. And again against Leeds at Old Trafford where Leeds just took them to the cleaners. So I always felt going into this game that there was something there for us if we were able to take our chances. did we take our chances? It felt like every time we attacked the ball was in the back of the net second half.
The thing about those chances though, Neil, is when you say if we take our chances, they become really high-quality chances. It's astonishing how close to the goal and with how few players between ball and goal, you know, it ends up in the back of the net over and over again. It felt like we were trying to score from the goal line, almost like as a competition at one point, to be able to get that deep. And we've seen it a few times. A few sides have led us into penalty areas. I think it goes all the way back. I've always said about the Real Madrid, the final in Paris. If you're defending well, you do not get into the opposition do not get into the penalty area that much. And we haven't always been great when we've been in opposition penalty areas, if we're honest. We were absolutely brilliant when we hit their penalty area yesterday.
Yeah, there's been a lot of games this season where you've watched us and Salah has been so far right, but also deep, not in an advanced position on the right. And we've not really got to the byline. And the same has been true of the fullbacks all season. I think we saw against Wolves where Tsimikas was playing where that changed. And we were, you know, I think the ball that, is it the Salah goal midweek where he, you know, he can't help but score?
Yeah.
And we've sort of seen that again on Sunday. You know, as I say, the ball that Elliot puts in for Nunes, he can't miss from that range. And then it felt like they kept coming. But the third goal is just one of the best goals. I mean, I've heard people saying it's Dalglish-esque, people comparing it to Coutinho, what he did to De Gea at Old Trafford. It's sensational from Salah in the build-up. I mean, I have a little bit of sympathy for Martinez in that Luke Shaw does him no favours for 90 minutes. But the way Salah just gave him twisted blood, floored him, and then the ball, and then the finish from Gakpo, it's an outrageous angle, isn't it? What a chip. And some of the quality we showed in the goals, Gakpo's finish, Firmino, the typical Bobby finish in a way, wriggling out of nowhere. We just showed so much quality. But there, and said, last five games, Manchester United, we've scored 21 goals against them. I saw on the way here. And you forget the 4-2, you know, during COVID at Old Trafford. Obviously the 5-0, the 4-0 here. Yeah, we've had that 2-1 defeat in between. And then 7 yesterday. This is a golden age. And Manchester United have the muscle memory of getting smashed by Liverpool. That is what they do. They're Manchester United and they get thrashed by Liverpool.
Do you want to say that again? I repeated it twice because it felt so good. It was phenomenal work, it really was. Absolutely marvellous stuff. Let's go front to back. We don't do that sort of thing very often anymore, but when everyone plays as well as this, everyone deserves to get their moments, Ian Ryan. We will go front to back. We will start with the front three because it is three braces. Let's talk about Gakpo. These are two tremendous finishes. The goal he scores at Newcastle, it's created by the Salah ball. He's just got to force it past the goalkeeper. You know, he gets the goal against Everton arriving at the back post. He's delighted with the movement. The point here is, this is what we were told we were getting. That's what makes these two goals so special for me. This is the footballer. This is what we were told was on the bottle when we bought the bottle. You got to see it yesterday. You got to see all the ingredients.
Yeah, and it's a real reminder about, you know, not jumping to conclusions too quickly, because there's been a lot of people writing Gakpo off and he's only been here a very, very short amount of time. And I think we've said on lots of these shows that given the side he came into, you've got to allow for a bit of an adjustment period, and he's got that now. And he looks tremendous at the minute, you have to say that. You know, he all of a sudden, you know, that physical presence that maybe he wasn't using, you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks ago, he now is using it, and he's using it really, really well. And I think there was a really interesting point made at the end of the game yesterday when I watched it back, and I think it might have been soon, as you said, for his second goal. I wonder whether he tries that cute, delicate finish if he doesn't score the first one, because the confidence is oozing through him after that first one. And it is a brilliant goal. And I think, listen, Martinez doesn't do De Gea any favours. And I'm sure we'll come on to his performance a little bit later on, because it did look like someone had dropped a small child into a man's game of football at times yesterday. And I think, you know, for the other goals, you know, you look at Salah. There's been a lot of talk about Salah this season. And I've mentioned again on other shows where he can't get away from the fact that he's not been at his best at times this season. But my God, the performance he delivered yesterday, you'll never see him more a 10 out of 10 performance. It was unbelievable. They could not get near him. They could not live with him. He was simply brilliant. And he gets two goals and two assists. And that's important to remember, by the way, because a lot of talk before the game as well about, actually, I think it was Carragher said, you know, is he a great player or is he just a great goal scorer? And I thought that was quite an interesting thing to say. And I think, well, the fact that he does get so many assists, I don't think you can just label him as this great goal scorer. There's so much more to his game. And I think you can have a conversation at times that maybe he does take on shots that he could square. But all centre-forwards love to do that. And that's why they get so many goals. He is, at his very best, one of the best that's ever pulled on the red shirt. He was simply brilliant yesterday. And United could not handle him. And there's been a lot of talk about their big footballers. And at times, you have to say, I've been quite impressed with Varane and Martinez in certain moments. And I think that Martinez has been on a bit of a weird journey where he got absolutely battered when he first came in. And then people were starting to say, well, maybe he is slightly better than what you think and he's handling the physical stuff a bit more. Salah made fucking mincemeat of the pair of them yesterday. It's some performance. And then you talk about Nunes, who I said, thought he had a really difficult first half. But again, it just shows the mentality of him where he comes out and gives a totally different display in that second 4-5, and I thought he was really good as well.
On the Salah point, growing up as a Liverpool fan, you know, you're always hearing about Kenny Dalglish's behind.
Yeah.
You hear so much about it down the years, this legendary arse and what he could do with it. Salah, like, he's just holding them off. It's just good to put, he's taking the piss. Like, they're assaulting him. He's got two or three defenders around him, and everything is under his control. The ball sticks to his foot. He's holding them off. He's assessing his options. He's weighing up where Trent is, weighing up where Gakpo is. It was just marvellous to watch.
On the assist thing as well, I think we have to remember that he's got 11 this season, and he got more than anyone else in the Premier League last season. So he does get assists. I think we should probably point that out. What I noticed today, or like yesterday, is that he's having fun with it. He's having as much fun when those other lads score as when he scores. He's now, I don't know whether or not he wasn't before, but he's now 100% embracing this role as being the guy, the centrepiece to bring these new guys in, and being the constant in this new generation of forward line. And you mentioned before, Neil, the Arsenal 5-1 and the Roma 5-2. And what those two games had in common was it was a forward line that was just getting used to each other, just realising what they could do when they really get it right. And I felt like that happened again yesterday. I mean, with Gakpo, the thing I loved most about, he didn't look at the goal either time for either finish, because he knew where he was and he knew exactly what he was going to do. And his reaction to the second goal, because we were all like, wow, that was a great goal. His reaction was, yes, here I am, Cody Gakpo, welcome. And that filled me with so much joy.
There's the idea of them suddenly having fun, Mo, I think that it's been something that's been missing from the football, you know, all the way through this season, and even at times towards the back end of last season, when it was, if we're all honest about it was a slog, there was a job to be done. You know, you could there was a lot of 2-1s, there was a lot of grimacing, and that's fine. That's literally sometimes what you've got to do with the way football works. This season, there haven't been 2-1s. There's been the slog, and the slog's not been a positive slog. I think now, in hindsight, for instance, you get to see the quality of some of the attacking in patches against Wolves. You get to sort of think to yourself the way they've just undone Newcastle. The second against Everton, when they were meant to be on the floor for confidence, but then suddenly the second happens. I just sort of wonder if there's been a lot of very good work done for 3 or 4 weeks on the training ground, yeah, around the patterns that we attack in, about the way you all work together. And now you've got there's Nunez, the way he reacts after his disallowed goal, and the two midweek against Wolves where he's conducting the celebrations. I wonder whether or not one of the things that has actually changed is they've been doing great work on the training pitch, but they've been doing great work that they've loved every minute of.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, sometimes when a manager, you sense when a player doesn't really believe or buy into what a manager's telling him, whether he thinks it's not a good idea, whether he thinks he's not able to do it or not. But you see that reflected in the performances, and the flip side is true as well. And I listened to Gakpo after the game, and he said, we are getting better every game because of training. And I do think that's 100% what it is. But I think sometimes as well, it just allows you to flip the mindset. If you have a result like we did, I think the derby was a really good result, because people went into it with fear and came out of it with hope. And then we were able to build on it. And we were able to put Real Madrid aside and say, look, that was a blip. In the league, we're still going forward. We're still not conceding a goal. 5 games, no goals in the league. That's something to build on. And you're seeing the fruits of the labour. And once you see the fruits of the labour, everything accelerates, I think, in terms of progression. And we're going to go talk about Harvey Elliott as well. I think for him as well, he's another one who's had a really difficult time adjusting to this midfield role. But in the last two games, it feels like he's cracked it to a certain extent. He knows how to affect the game in this role without being a detriment at the other end. And I think these are all the things where it's like, okay, now we're getting it. Now I feel it. Now I see it. That's going to help us be able to build from here, I think.
I was in different shows, Ian, talking about the idea of the manager's playing for time. Going all the way back to, I think, pretty much the aftermath of the Brighton 3-0. I began to say the manager just needs to play for time here. He needs to get them right, play for time, and see where we are. Just hang in. We've just got to hang in on a number of fronts as much as possible. And listen, don't get me wrong, you know, I wish we'd have had Real Madrid in the last 8 of the Champions League and not the last 16, because we may all now be feeling very, very different indeed. But the playing for time part is part of, he's dipped out. All three of those midfielders, Fabinho, Henderson and Elliott, have seen the minutes cut quite markedly at different times, but over the last sort of month and a half, 2 months, they've seen the amount of time they get on the pitch cut. They've been, clearly, when we see the minutes cut, it doesn't mean they just sit in theirs. They've been working on stuff, they've been working with them, they've been working on themselves, I suspect. And this is part of seeing the fruits of that labour. And Elliott, good against Wolves, absolutely excellent there. The most pressures put on by any Liverpool player was tied between Gakpo, Elliott and Henderson. And you get to see with Elliott, you know, what I loved was first half. One of the most encouraging things for me first half was right in front of me in that first 45 minutes. I watched him win his battles. He was winning his battles. He was nicking it back. He was getting there first. He was knocking lads out the way. And that's a sea change from what you've seen. And then the rest of the performance, and I think he's terrific second half, the rest of the performance is built on that.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, you can talk about giving the manager credit, because I think the easiest thing to do was to play by Cesic, because I think that's what everyone was expecting. And we did the show leading up to the game, and I think the general feeling in the room was he's probably the first name on the team sheet from a midfield perspective. But then you have to do remember, you know, he's 18 years of age, and you've got to keep thinking that you can't just keep playing a kid. And you've seen it down the years countless times where people have been overplayed at the wrong time. So it is important to balance his minutes. And in terms of Elliott, I thought he was brilliant. And I think, you know, you also need to kind of give shout-outs to the captain, I think, who I thought had his best performance for a long time. He's involved. And I think the third and fourth goal, he helps Liverpool get on the front foot and break. It's hard to remember the order of the goals, but I think he is the one who gets them
the second
on the front
as well.
Foot.
Yeah. He's involved in the second. Him and Fabinho sort the second out, create yeah. the space, and it goes from there.
So he was instrumental in getting Liverpool up the pitch and stuff and playing the ball to the likes of Salah or Gakpo when Liverpool were on the march then. And I think Fabinho as well, on the back of a good performance against Wolves, all of a sudden started to look a little bit like his old self again. And I think we've probably all sat on various shows and talked about, you know, is he finished? And you're kind of trying to square that circle, because he's 29, he shouldn't be. Yes, he's played a lot of football, but he shouldn't be. And now there are real glimpses that actually maybe he's not, and maybe he is able to find himself again. And I think what I thought was interesting leading up to the match, Salah gave an interview and he talked about some of the real honest conversations that had gone on, not only with the manager and the players, but actually amongst some of the other players as well. And he was part of those conversations. And you got a real sense from Salah that he doesn't see the season as being dead at all. You know, he was very, very motivated around going to get, you know, some of the personal stuff around, you know, Robbie's kind of Premier League goal scoring record and all that. But actually that the players, they saw yesterday as a real opportunity to show everyone. And they've taken the fair amount of stick this season. Some of it is warranted, of course. But it will have hurt them, that. It will have hurt them, because these are players who've won the very biggest honours. And all of a sudden, they're being completely written off. At times, they've almost been embarrassed in certain games. And they'll have felt that. And I think they saw yesterday as this opportunity to go, you know what, we can fucking show these. And we're playing the perfect opponents in many ways. Because if you show it against these, then the narrative all of a sudden changes. And Liverpool, they were brilliant yesterday. And as I say, we sit here now and you're still almost in a little bit of disbelief, to be honest.
It's the Elliott performance for me is the one which it was exactly everything that you've wanted to see. All put into one big ball. And it won't always be. Again, you know, young players' progression's not linear. No footballer's progression's linear, but young players' progression's not linear. But yesterday was, this is what the plan is. This is what we wanted to do with him. This is the footballer we think he is. And he pays back that coaching staff in absolute spades.
Yeah, I've been critical of him earlier this season on this show. I felt that one of the issues was just that he was being played too often. We'll talk about Bajcetic and the use, you know, using players sparingly. It felt like he was being hung out to dry at one point, week after week, on the right-hand side of the midfield, and he was struggling with that role at the time. Trent was obviously going through a bad patch, and there was so much scrutiny, it felt, on the right-hand side of the team. yesterday, eyebrows are raised when he's named in the starting lineup, but I mean, I've been devouring so much content. A lot of it on the Anfield Raps award winning subscription service.
Marvellous.
But since the win, and I think I read a stat that Henderson, Fabinho, and Elliott have played together 5 times this season. We've scored 20 odd goals, conceded 2, and won all 5, which I have to say I was surprised to read. I thought yesterday, before the goal rush, he's probably the man of the match. He was just everywhere. Absolutely everywhere, and it was his little combinations and his courage and the ambition he was showing in the way he was just popping the ball off, chipping it over, the link up with Robertson, the link up with the forwards ahead of him, and the safety blanket, if you like, of Henderson and Fabinho, and them sometimes tucking in a little bit closer together, and him almost being given free rein. It suddenly, like you say, you thought, oh, this is the plan. This is what he brings to us. This is what he can give us. Because he's so dynamic.
And he's clever.
He's so clever, so cute with some of his play. And again, he exploited the weaknesses time and time again. And to the point that he, you know, is it the sixth goal? Where he's just in acres of space and they've just given up. They've just, you know, forgotten about, you know, even trying against him.
It's one way to talk about the other midfield too. Henderson on the left is interesting to me. I remember the first time the manager did it, certainly that I can remember, it was Chelsea at home last season. And it all just felt a teeny bit awkward. And there'll come times, I think, if the game goes a certain way where it might just do again, i.e. because he does want to go the other way onto his right foot and all of that. But yesterday, it felt like it worked absolutely perfectly. It felt like it was the plan being executed in there. Ian said before about the fact that Henderson's excellent, Fabinho's excellent. It's the performances you've been waiting in tandem from the two of them. I think there's been games here and there or 15-minute patches here and there where one of them's played very well, but the other's not quite been at the party when they've been on the pitch together. All of a sudden there, I thought, with the two of them, you got to see them effectively look at Casemiro and Fred and decide that they're better. They just decided they were better. Yeah. And I felt like they had that from about the 4th minute. I don't think that was when the goals were coming. I think that they decided they were better from about minute 4. Are you all messing? Because have you looked at these? We're better than these. And it was, I think that was the sudden step that I think sort of managed to give everything else the platform to function.
When's the last time an opposition team have come to Anfield and you've been so prepared psychologically for a player like Casemiro? You know, he's had so much hype. He's been so vaunted. There's been so many long reads sent to me, you know, about how he watches games in China at 2 a.m. and he prepares for every opposition. Well, he didn't prepare for us. You need to watch a few more games in the J League or the Chinese Premier, Chinese top flight. Well, hit me, anyone with a name.
No, go on, just crack on.
But it was marvellous to see Fabinho, Henderson. Klopp's talked him up in the press conference on Friday, and I was working back to his best, and I was really interested by his comments, the timing of them, whether, you know, he's at times this season, it's looked like there's been some sort of, you know, irreparable falling out between Jurgen and Fabinho, the way they've been on the pitch, the way that Klopp's got on his case. But I think a big part of it is obviously he just knows what this fella's level is and how far short of it he's been. And I thought to say that he's working his way back, he's almost there on Friday, and then Fabinho to produce one of his, if not his best performance of the season, is massive. Again, yesterday, he was just so much more, like you say, it felt like early on they realised they had the measure of that midfield, and Fabinho was determined to show what he could do. And he was just being more adventurous in his closing down, in his pressing, in the positions he found himself in the build-up to the second goal, where it all gets a bit scrappy and he's fighting virtually on the edge of their box for the ball. And I've been frustrated watching Fabinho, thinking, we know you've got so much more in your locker than what you've been showing us in terms of his passing range. And I don't know whether it's been, at times last year, there was such a clear partnership developed, a tandem, him and Thiago. And, you know, by nature, if you have one of the best passers of a football the world's ever seen, and you're a big destroyer, then when you get the ball, you're going to give it to him, aren't you? But it's frustrated me because Fabinho has so much more in his locker, and I felt that he was released to show that yesterday, and Henderson mopping up around him and also showing great quality when he was on the ball.
I think the manager has to take a lot of credit for the way that he's been able to bring them back in, because you're right, he has been publicly hard on Fabinho in a way that kind of raised a few eyebrows, but I think the way he works sometimes is that he's harder on the guys who he trusts. It's like, I'm hard on you because I know you can take it. I felt like he was that way with Genie quite a lot. And it's maybe the dogs of midfield that, like, I know I'll make you do a lot, but it's because I know you can do it. And for him to be kind of getting a bit of public criticism was maybe Jurgen trying to elbow him a little bit. But I think it was notable that both Henderson and Robertson don't play midweek. I think if you think about the way we play from our original or normal starting 11, they are probably the two most intense characters. And when you go into this game where I think aggression intensity is going to always be important, giving them that break to say, okay, we need you at 100% for Man United was a really good move. And I think it helped them both. Like, if you look at Robertson, he was able to... He had loads of space. They gave him so much space. But he was able to capitalise on it perfectly. And I kind of had a little look on some of the stats show sheets before coming in here. And the average positions, Fabinho and Henderson are literally either side of the centre circle, dead on the halfway line. They've locked down the middle of the pitch. So that allowed Elliot to go around and be a bit more flowery and try to get closer to Salah and to Trent. But it just gave everybody the security of like, okay, everything else is moving. This is here. And it moves forward and it comes back, but it stays together. And whether or not it's just that they've now got the energy to be able to do that job properly because they're not being overused. I think back to not that long ago when we were thinking we've only really got three guys who can play in midfield. And now we have the ability to say, okay, we're going to rest you to get the best from you. And I think we can now do that with all of them. And we've now got, what, six players maybe? We say, okay, they can do a good job in this midfield. And that allows you to rotate and it just makes everything easier.
I think the point about Klopp knowing, you know, maybe which players to use kind of carrot and stick with is important because I think it's easy to forget, you know, that's a sign of really, really good man management, isn't it? Knowing which players you need to put your arm around, but actually knowing which players you can give them a bit of a volley and stuff. And maybe they've got that relationship where Fabinho's absolutely fine with it. Doesn't look like he's fine with it, I have to say at times, but maybe he is fine with it. And that
it's
is
more of a bust than I am.
That is a skill. And I think, you know, just thinking a little bit about, you know, these players as well and how fierce they are in terms of competitors. You know, Fabinho will have been well aware of who he's coming up against. He's coming up against his international teammate, Casemiro, who's been absolutely bigged up through the roof. And at times, rightly so, he's been brilliant for United. And I think he's brought a level of steeliness and leadership that you don't see at all yesterday. And I thought, no, let's have it right. They were a disgrace yesterday. You know,
we're going to slow them in a minute here.
Yeah, I'm sure we should. I'm certain people can try and sugarcoat it and stuff. But if you're watching that, that's not for sugarcoating. They were a disgrace yesterday. But I thought some of the comments that have kind of been spoken about going into the game were interesting. You know, Trent talked about, you know, now is not the time for dissecting the season. You know, we'll do that at the end of the season. And I think that's interesting because I think it's almost taken maybe the manager, but certainly the players, a lot of time this season to just appreciate where they are as a football team. And I think it's hurt them and it's hit them hard because they were expecting so much more from themselves. They were expecting to be challenging. And we can all talk about lack of investment. It was going to be really, really hard to challenge for the title and all. I get that. But no one saw this drop off to this extent. Everyone still thought Liverpool would be in and amongst it, certainly in the top four conversation. And they were a mile off it until recently. So I think that's taken a lot of time for people just to accept that they're not going to be challenging for the league this season and they're probably not going to go deep in the Champions League unless something mad happens. And listen, mad things can happen, as we saw yesterday. But that will have...
By the way, if there's one manager who's delighted about yesterday in a way, it's Carlo Ancelotti. Because I reckon those Madrid players will all have been sent the DVD of that.
Yeah.
They will all have been told, you watch this, that is not finished.
Well, it's funny because they were playing against Real Betis literally hours after our game and Betis have got Man United. So I just imagine Ancelotti and Pellegrini being like, you see that game there? Yeah. Rather you than me, lad.
I don't think we'll overturn that.
No, absolutely not.
But I think we might fucking scare them, though, on the night. And then you see where you go from there. But that will be a tough one to overturn. We know that. But I think, yeah, I think a lot of them now are almost just in the place of, we know what the challenge is now. We know the league's gone. And we know probably it's going to be difficult to go any deeper in the Champions League. The challenge is, go and get that top four. And my God, you look up for it.
Go and get third. Ian, just on the fullbacks. They are the best versions of themselves. There was still the thing that they do where they're both bombing into number nine at times. And again, back to the idea of being able to see it and go, yeah, that's what it's meant to be. Both of them pop up at number nine at different points. They're passing to each other. They're playing each other in. I think that's often a sign of a Liverpool team that's functioning when Robertson's finding Trent or Trent's finding Robertson. Yeah. The different players in the way in which the space they end up with, the way in which they go about the business. But both of them very much put their 10 out of 10 selves out there against Manchester United.
Yeah, they are very different players, and it's important to remember that. You know, Robertson is all about aggression and tempo, and I thought he was back to his absolute best yesterday. I think, you know, it's him, like everyone else, has just been below their top level, but I thought he was phenomenal yesterday, Robertson. I really did. And I think, you know, the heat map of both fullbacks is really interesting. They're really touch tight for large parts of the game. I thought it was one of Trent's best games as well. And I think, you know, obviously second half he's not tested loads defensively, but when he was, I think he was really, really good. No one goes past him yesterday. And I think on the ball, again, there's just real glimpses of genius when he's on the ball. Some of the passing is just off the scale. So both fullbacks were supreme yesterday and really, really key to what Liverpool were doing. And I think, you know, that's another real sign that, you know, Liverpool are in a really, really good place. And we may well come on to him in a minute, but just having that solidity of a Konate and Van Dijk partnership does them the world of good.
Let's go on to it.
Does them the world of good.
Let's go on to it, Neil, on that partnership at the back. The two of them are imperious. They love different bits of the battle. Virgil looks like he's had a good injury. It looks like he's injured well. Sometimes that happens to players. Yeah. It looks like the idea of you literally cannot do any exercise for a period of time here, pal. Just sort of try to chill yourself out a little bit. You know, he's remarked himself that maybe he played too many games. He played more minutes than anyone else in a top five European league in the 12 months leading up to the World Cup. It looks genuinely as though the break of an injury has done him the world of good. And Konate, it is just a question of, you know, if we can keep him fit, it is some centre-half partnership that you can build something on.
It really is. He's a colossus. We said that earlier this season. There was the game at the Tottenham Stadium when we saw the two of them together for the first time in a while. And what Konate brings is just unique in a way, because he's incredible. He's incredible in the air. He's so quick. His natural abilities and the way that he gels with Virgil is a joy to behold. Virgil has played every game for so long, and he's been so used to being the man who plays week in, week in, and week out. So obviously, you know, him having an enforced break has probably done him the world of good. I can't imagine a world in which we lose, you know, 5-2 to Madrid at Anfield if Konate starts that night, which is obviously regretful, and that's the big issue, isn't it? It's just, can we get him on the pitch often enough? And as you said there, Ian, the effect he has on Trent alongside him, I think, is massive too. The assurance that he brings and his calmness on the ball. I mean, obviously, a lot of the time you end up talking about his height and his strength and, you know, his physicality. But his assurance on the ball, the way he's able to bring the ball out, the passes he picks. I really do think it's an overused expression, but he's another Rolls Royce of a centre-half.
He is. And I think the thing about that game, particularly for Konate and for Trent, is that they will have known that they have to deal with the biggest threat for Manchester United, namely Marcus Rashford. His whole game is going to be trying to get in between them and causing trouble. Maybe running in behind if they get a quick turnover or something. So they knew that even if they drop their concentration just for a little bit, then they could be exposed. And concentration has probably been one of the biggest things that both of them struggle with. And they were on it. They were on it the whole game. And it was really pleasing to see. And yeah, we kind of forget, but Konate, I think it was, his sixth Premier League start of the season? Like, when you put the whole season into context of that, it kind of makes you think, well, yeah, how many more of those kind of funky performances would have been avoided if we could have just got him out there? How you fix that, I don't know, because obviously the injuries are injuries. You can't predict them, you can't plan for them. But the confidence that everybody gets from that partnership being there, and the five of them really locking down. Because even when Alisson had his little mistake, he knew that Konate was there. And it was very much like, okay, when goals happen, it's normally when one mistake leads to two, leads to three. When you've got those five there, one mistake is normally just one. And it's covered for by the other two. And we saw that yesterday. And again, being able to rely on that gives everyone a little bit more time to relax, to breathe, to play their football. And I think you see it reflecting further up the pitch.
You got the impression. Go on.
I was going to say, there's the moment where Rashford gets in the second half. And is it Trent who shows him wide? With just a great bit of defending. You know, absolutely brilliant bit of defending. And everything that people say that he doesn't have in his locker. And so I just thought that was a great moment, really.
It was. It felt like the three of them, the goalkeeper and the two centre-halves, Ian, you saw them celebrate the clean sheet against Wolves. I didn't quite clock whether or not they celebrated the win there. But not least because my head was elsewhere, spinning in a daze. But there was that. You got the impression the three of them were fully committed to the idea of this just stays nil. This is just staying nil, and we are walking off this pitch with it nil. Konate's unlucky not to score second half. He does really well from a set piece, but the three of them feel like this is our unit. This is what we want to be.
Yeah, and you want to see that. And I think, you know, you want to see defenders love the art of defending. I think when maybe Trent had a little bit of criticism, it has been at times that he maybe doesn't love it as much as the other side of the game, and you can kind of see that because he's so creative and stuff. And the bit that Neil's alluding to there, I think, is interesting. Now, I think it may end up getting flagged offside, that, but Van Dijk congratulates Trent.
Yeah.
Like you wouldn't believe when he makes
hooks
that challenge,
him,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, and the game's pretty much done and dusted by then anyway, but it's like, we don't let these in, not even once. We keep this at fucking nil, and that is the focus now. And I think, you know, if you want to get anywhere and if you want to be a successful team, then you have to have that platform and you have to have that base, and it needs to be solid. And I agree with the boys, you know, having Canate there, Jesus Christ, honestly, what a player. Honestly, what a player. You see it at the World Cup and you think you're watching a player who's 27, 28, he's that good. It looks like he's been around the block so long. He defies belief, and obviously he's a physical specimen as well. And what he gives Trent, honestly, I don't think you can put a value on it, because he offers that security. And I think you can see it in Trent's game as well. All of a sudden he knows, well, if someone does get in behind me, there's this big fella who's going to come across and sort the situation out. And no disrespect to Matip and Gomez, who've, listen, they've done good things for this football club, no doubt about it, but they are now looking like they are dropping levels and stuff. And, you know, Liverpool will have a decision to make on one or two footballers in the summer. But if they can keep Canate, if they can keep him next to Van Dijk and fit, then you look at the remaining fixtures and Liverpool should be in fear of no one. And there are some toughies coming up, by the way, certainly,
well,
in the league.
Should be scared of that.
But they should not be fearing anyone, because that is when it's at its very best. And I've heard lots of conversations about, oh, here's the best partnership, Martinez and Varane. That's been a conversation recent weeks amongst kind of...
One's, you know, tiny, people, one can't run.
I know, but that's been the conversation. Are they the best partnership? They don't even come close to this partnership at its very best. And it is just about keeping them on the pitch, because as Mo said there, Canate's played six times. Of all the areas of the football pitch where you want to have a kind of a base and a partnership, it's that centre-half position.
You want to be able to choose when you opt them in and out.
Absolutely. It's critical to any football team who wants to go on and achieve anything.
Okay, Firmino, and the perfect emotion of it all, Mo. It was gorgeous as he came on. And then he gets his goal. I think it was almost too perfect, the goal. Yeah. You couldn't quite get the song was like going in 83 different ways immediately afterwards. It didn't quite have the same moments as when it came on. But it meant the world. It meant the world to him. Salah as well, breaking the record. You know, I felt it was real sort of act of love.
Yes.
Territories from both Firmino and Salah there yesterday in different ways. You know, everything that we've been through with the pair of them, everything that they've achieved with us, everything we've achieved together. And it just became this most perfect moment around the sixth and the seventh goals.
Honestly, like the moment I saw him going through on goal, I thought, this is it. This is the perfect way to end this game. And it was. And I loved his celebration so much. Like, because he felt that as well. He was like, yes, I'm so glad. Because it feels like the him leaving is sad for all of us. Obviously, it's sad for all of us. But I think deep down, all of us are like, this is probably the right time for it to happen. And it's the good time for it to happen, because it's not leaving us in the lurch, because clearly we can see the future. But it means that we can celebrate the great stuff that he's done without getting into a situation where we're like, oh, is he still around? Like, he's gone out at the perfect time.
And he shows that yesterday by virtue of the fact that he scores.
Exactly.
You know, he scores a goal for Liverpool against Manchester United.
He's got 10 goals this season.
Yeah.
He's having a good season. He's having a good time. He's been able to leave us with highlights. And I think that's such an important thing for a player when they're making that decision to move on. When is the right time? I don't want to end up regretting it. So I'm pleased for him as the man that he looks like he's going to be able to do it. And I'm really excited for what between now and the end of the season brings for him. Because, again, now we're in a situation where, like you were saying with the centre-halves, we can pick and choose when we play and we can work out when he's going to play. And there's a couple of times where we're going to have three games in a week where we're going to have to be a little bit funky with our formations, and there's going to be a chance to really give him a platform to kind of say go out and go on your swan song. But yeah, it was just a beautiful way to end a beautiful match.
Yeah, we didn't get to have this with Sadio because of the manner of his departure, you know, it not being confirmed, and then it just overnight and he'd gone, and we didn't get to have the emotional farewell. With Firmino, we get to have the Bobby Firmino Greatest Hits tour. You know, it's a 3-month tour. There's a stop at the Etihad coming up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I'd like to see him, you know, recreate some of that magic. We get to see just what a joy he is. I said, he is joy personified, isn't he? And the moment he comes on the pitch, he writes his own script. He has given us so much. He's been such a sensational footballer. Keita, everything we've done under Jürgen, as others have said, been there from the start. He's won it all, always with a smile on his face, always about to kung fu kick someone's head off. I just have so much love for him. There was an outpouring of love, wasn't there, when he came onto the pitch yesterday? And, you know, the celebration, aside from someone trying to take Curtis Jones out, which Jürgen wasn't best pleased about.
Understandably so.
Yeah, it was right in front of me. He was absolutely apoplectic. Firmino, it's incredible, this situation we find ourselves in, where, as you say, a few months back, you're thinking, what's the situation here with the attack? Where are we? Now we have a front three, a clearly defined front three, that are finding, as you say, a relationship between Gakpo, Nunes and Salah that we're building. And then we have Diogo Jota, who scored the fifth most goals under Jurgen Klopp for Liverpool. And he's going to score a lot more. It's just a matter of game time and rhythm. I still have a lot of faith.
Absolutely.
In Diogo Jota. You've got...
if Luke Shaw doesn't rip his face off, he probably makes it 8-0.
Yeah. You know, if Luke Shaw didn't have immunity from any sort of consequences for his actions. And then obviously, you have Luis Diaz back in training, and then you have Firmino on the bench as well. To have three attackers of that quality on the bench and three on the pitch, you know, it's an exciting time, isn't it?
Okay. Do you want to do Firmino?
I mean, what else can you say about Firmino, honestly? I think it's hard not to love players who make all the footballers look better, and he just makes everyone else look better. And I think maybe the manager might have wanted to keep him a little bit longer. You've got a sense of that, I'm thinking, some of the kind of conversations and press conferences he's given. But I agree with what the room said there. I think it's probably the right time. And there's definitely a thing around not overstaying your welcome. And it just feels like he's going at that sweet spot. But my God, what a contribution he's made.
And he's going to get five more between now and the end of the season, minimum.
But he's got another hat-trick against Arsenal to come up.
Yeah, he's got to sort that out. That is on the horizon. Absolutely marvellous. Yeah, so, I mean, it felt like another referee who does his big shop in Didsbury. if we're all honest about it. It was quite something throughout the game. Precisely what they were getting away with. But then I think maybe the referee didn't want to sully the affair with cards.
I was all right with it for two reasons. One, we are absolutely terrible of playing against 10 men. And we probably wouldn't have scored 7 goals against 10 men. And two, like, to be honest, from the ref's point of view, it's like, I can see what you're doing. You want to get off the pitch. I'm not going to let you all go with it. No, this is actually going to hurt you more to stay on and suffer. So I'm going to let you get away.
I almost thought yeah, Ten Hag took that approach with Fernandes, because you could see Fernandes wanted to come off. I think it was when Rashford comes off. And it's like, no, you're not fucking coming off here, lad. You've been a disgrace. You're going to sit and suffer all of this because you deserve to suffer all of it. I tell you what, if he's the captain of your football club, you got fucking
problems.
He
doesn't fancy his captain, I'm telling you that now. Like, against Man City and against us, he does not play in number 10. He's been shunted out to the left to accommodate Rashford up front and Weghorst, who's a... He's got Wout Weghorst playing in number 10. Now, you're the captain of Manchester United. You're playing for Portugal. You're a fantastic player. You believe that you should be there. Big games, and you've been shunted out wide. And let's face it, he didn't do much good out there either, did he?
Do you remember the Paul Ince story? You know, the Houllier Paul Ince story.
He can't get carried off the pitch.
He goes off goes off, doesn't he, against United, and Houllier absolutely lambasts him in the dressing room. My captain has to be carried off the pitch if he's going off again against United. Fernandes, I mean, I'd be amazed if he's not getting singled out, you know, by Ten Hag personally today, because I'm not seeing anything like it.
It was remarkably petulant. It was so indisciplined. Yeah, so indisciplined.
He's all over the place. The histrionics, the laughable acting, you know, when Konate, you know, the hand off to the shoulder and he's clutching his face going down platoon, then getting embarrassed by our 18-year-old Busquets when Bajetic just makes a show of him and then he just stops running. He simply gives
up. That's the one. Yeah. That's the one. If you're Ten Hag and you watch that unfold and he doesn't bother to track back and he's supposed to be the captain of the football club, in fact, captain or no captain, you just simply have to track back and he just allows him to wander into the kind of penalty area. I'm thinking as soon as he gets him into this dressing room, he's going to fucking fill him in. Honestly, he must have been fuming with him.
And that's the thing, right? When it's all going well for you and you're playing well, or you're winning games, you're picking up points, and everyone's saying, oh yeah, you're on the rise, you start to believe, okay, we are this thing, and then you get punched in the mouth and all of the old things start coming out. You realize who you really are. And we've seen it before where Man United are getting beaten by Liverpool and they just start being petulant and they start trying to kick us, and they did it again. That's not an attitude that's going to get you to win many games. If you're down and that's the first thing you think, right, I'm just going to start lashing out, then good teams will take you to the fucking cleaners time and time again. And Ten Hag saw in his players that they're not quite as far along as maybe they think they are.
And it's about tone as well. So you've got on the other side, you've got Anthony, he's got no interest at all in tracking anyone back. Just got no interest in it. But he can look and go, well, my captain doesn't track anyone back either. So why have I got to track anyone back? And it spreads through the team. And listen, they'll be back United, and they've got some nice fixtures coming up, and I'm sure they'll take care of Southampton next weekend, and it'll maybe look a little bit different. But
and they could win the Europa League.
And they could win the
but
Europa
I think
League.
If they play Arsenal in the Europa League, Arsenal will murder them.
That'll live long in the memory, that, for them. Of course it will for us because of what it means, but that'll cut deep that for a long, long time, especially the manager, who's certainly, you can see, he's a man of a, you know, he's got a lot of pride about how he goes about his job and stuff, and that will have hurt him no end yesterday.
Are they kidding with the little centre-half?
Honestly, I don't think the shorts are helping him or Luke Shaw. But honestly, he looks like he's wearing kecks.
I can't deal with him. I reckon
fucking three quarter fellas going
I couldn't
on.
Believe how little he was. Like, I knew he wasn't very tall, but I'm watching him play football.
I'm not even having his 5'9", you know.
No, that's a lie. That's his Tinder height.
Yeah, that's fucking bullshit. That's
honestly,
absolute bullshit.
I think they bought Weghorst so he can get stuff off high shelves for him and Carrington. Honestly, he seems such a mess emotionally as well. I mean, the thing is, to be fair to them, they won a trophy last couple of weeks. They've got a great result against Barcelona. A lot of it feels like, though, it's a bit of an emotional hothouse, and sometimes your greatest strength can be your greatest weakness. They've been hanging in games, staying alive, fighting, don't get me wrong, but to me it felt a little bit like the emotion, and we saw it maybe for us against Real Madrid, you know, the goal that makes it 3-2 kills us for 20 minutes in that game. It felt to me like they were just a bit of an emotional state after it goes 2-3-0 there, Manchester United nil. It is actually no way to behave.
No, not at all. They're still in the game at 2-0, aren't they? Yeah. I know the third obviously comes very quickly, but they're still in the game. If they were to have got one back, we've seen a lot of times this season they've shown that ability to go behind and then fight their way back in games. But as you say, the ill discipline, really, the lack of discipline, the petulance across the pitch was shocking. I mean, it was becoming a joke what Luke Shaw could do before he was going to get a book in. I was baffled by it, really. But as you say, Anthony offers his fullback very little protection at all. Fred has been much vaunted again in recent weeks of us having a resurgence. I didn't see that. Certainly didn't see that yesterday.
It's odd he swaps them. I think the manager is a proud man. He's obviously done a good job with them and got them disciplined. But it's mad he picks the same team as he does against Newcastle in the League Cup final, but almost all of the front six play a different position.
Yeah.
Well, five of the front six all play a different position. He swapped the two centre mids over. Weghorst comes and plays 10 rather than plays 9. Rashford was playing left, comes in there. Fernandez was playing 10, moves over there to play the left hand side. Only Anthony keeps his position.
Think he's overthought it.
I think it's back to this idea of he does something similar again. City, and I think he's thinking, what's my team that just gets me through an hour or gets me solid into 30, 35, which he does get. But then I think if you are playing, you can be a bit like, yeah, but you've moved all this, mate. You know what I mean? In the same way you're saying, when he gets back into the dressing room, he's going to be furious with him. There's every chance Fernandez is going, but we were great last week. Why can't we do what we did last week?
I think as well, like, you see it affect them, because like Casemiro quite early on, he misplayed a few passes, and there was a couple of times where it was almost like he wanted to turn the other way and he forgot that he was on this side. And like you say, just those little things can start to kind of fester within the team, and then they don't look as good. I think it's very interesting as well, that midfield battle, when you think about it, because we mentioned before about Fabinho setting the tone, saying that we're better than them. Them two kept him out of the Brazil team all through that World Cup, playing together. And so he was like, okay, is this it? Is this the best partnership in Brazil? No, it's not. Allow me to put a hammer right through the middle of it. And there's a couple of other things as well. Like, there's a fellow on Twitter. I did obviously dive into Man United Twitter, because why the fuck wouldn't I? And I was looking at some of their excuses.
It's hard to go to sleep, wasn't it?
Oh, I'll tell you. There was lots of entertainment to be had. And they're talking about the fact that they've been playing 3 games a week for 3 months now. And yes, all the great talk about them. There was people talking about Man United winning the quadruple a couple of weeks ago, genuinely. In fact, after winning the title, the League Cup last week. But how hard is that? To play all of those games, and you're just getting to a point where you've just improved, and then you put all of that games into them, you're going to have fragility. You're going to have times where it doesn't work as well, and they all look like they were just a little bit worn down. Like, when I saw before the game that there was a fitness test for Varane, I was so pleased for two reasons. One, because I know that he's absolutely going to play. Like, they're not going to leave him out, and he's going to be compromised. So he's so important to them, they couldn't dare leave him out. but he's going to be playing and he's going to be compromised and we can get at them. And as for Martinez, we're talking about his height. One person who knows exactly how tall he is Cody Gakpo, because he's played against him loads of times for PSV against Ajax, and I think he munched him pretty much every time back then too.
There we are. Last little thing to sum it up, Neil. Liverpool are not dead. And they don't need to be resuscitated either. And that's what the conversation's been around, the improvements that need to come. My point on this is the surgery that is required remains required. You know, the idea of investing in, I'd still make the point of, you know, three midfielders and maybe a centre-half at this stage of proceedings, or two midfielders, a centre-half, and you decide, and a right-back, because you decide you're going to make the big move with Trent, which at some point I do think will happen, but it may or may not be this year. The point is more, though, it feels as though we can now look at it and begin to look at it, and especially if they continue this form, five consecutive clean sheets with the ability to make it six against Bournemouth. It's surgery to improve. It's not surgery to bring back the from the dead. And I think this is the it's important that not least because of the nature of the players that you'll get. You know, if you're able to say to players, you're coming to join us, not to get us back in the scrap, but because we think we can win everything again. It's a better sell. There is no footballer on the planet who's, even whether they watch the game or not, who sees yesterday's results, he would rather go to Manchester United than Liverpool. I refuse to believe there's a footballer on the planet who would go to a side that gets whacked 7-0 against its biggest rival. I just won't have it. You know, this is what Liverpool are. Nothing's changed, but that's the point. It was never quite as bad as you thought. A 7-0 doesn't mean they don't need to do anything. For me, the situation remains the same. The point is more what you're able to say to the outside world is, we're still a team that is capable of whacking Manchester United 7-0.
As I say, we're a team that regularly thrashes Manchester United. We're the team that their two top striking targets in the last 12 months have both chosen to come to Anfield. That was the beauty of yesterday. Nunez and Gakpo, both highly sought after. I believe in the case of Gakpo, they talked at length how he was Ten Hag's first choice. Those two players, two fabulous, young, talented players with so much going for them, so much potential, have both chosen they want to play for Jurgen Klopp. And who can blame them because of what we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years? It was never a case of us needing to ship out 8 or 9 this summer and bring in 8 or 9. We've seen what happens at Chelsea. That's not a way to run a football club. A way to run a football club is to build on what you've got, to identify the players that you can carry forward with you and identify the weaknesses. And as you say, it's still clear that we need 2 or 3 midfielders. I'd love to see a robust centre-half come in who has some of the attributes that Konate shows, that is able to, you know, deputise, to fill in, because both him and Virgil do need resting and there's going to be times when they've picked up injuries. So that is obvious for me. But also, our goals, and as I said on a show the other day, when Jurgen's been saying to us for weeks, we're not as bad as you think we are, lads. And we can still achieve something tangible this season. We're 3 points behind Spurs. Was it 7 points now behind United? Mm-hmm. You know, they're in sight. Third place is in sight.
Our goal difference is well better.
That's definitely true.
Well better. 14 goal swing on the goal difference. A 14
incredible.
Goal swing.
Incredible. I was thinking, I mean, Barcelona will always be on a pedestal because of what it meant, the occasion, the circumstances, Suarez coming back, Messi, the greatest player ever, you know, being 3-0 down from the first leg. But what we saw yesterday, you know, I could live another 40 years, hopefully I will, hopefully most of them I'll be at Anfield, and never see this again. That for me is the greatest league game I've ever witnessed. To take the second most successful club in English football history, for them to come to Anfield and just be absolutely humbled and humiliated by the best this country has to offer.
I think there's some sort of clause where they've now got to give us the ship canal. I think it's done. It was in the original paperwork and the deeds as they were done, going back all those years. We shouldn't be scared of anyone, Ian. Scared of no one and scared of nothing. I've had enough of that. I was actually in the shower yesterday, so I used to do this thing, I've talked about it on shows, where like I'd be brushing my teeth and I'd think, gonna win the championship brushing your teeth like that. And I'd be in the shower, I'd be doing, we're going back to my business, thinking about how do we win this league from here. And that was basically the whole of the 10 years that stretched from effectively the 2013-14 to, well, the 8 years from the 2013-14 season through to approximately when Liverpool won at Leicester on Boxing Day. I just think about how we're going to win this league from here. And yesterday morning I was in the shower and I was thinking to myself, got a league to win here, not this season's. We start winning next season's league today. That's what I was thinking. We'll start winning next season's league today. My God, we've taken a big step forward towards winning next season's league.
I think that's probably what the manager's telling them as well. You know, it's got to start somewhere. And I think if you are talking about, you know, potential players who want to come to the club, it would be foolish to think that they aren't watching what's unfolding this season.
Absolutely.
They'll have a massive eye on games such as yesterday. You know, the manager talked about it. No, the eyes of the world are on that fixture yesterday. It attracts more viewing figures than virtually any other kind of sporting event, I think, or somewhere, no, there or thereabouts. It's that big a global game. The two biggest clubs in England by an absolute mile, and everyone watches it. And that's why I'll hate United so much, because everyone will have seen that. Everyone will have seen them capitulate. But on the flip side, everyone will have seen Liverpool play so, so well, far and away above anything we've really seen this season. That might hurt, you know, the manager a little bit, because he'd be thinking, well, where's that level of performance been? And listen, you can't always beat people 7-0, but I think there'll be one or two where he's looked at it and thought, well, they've performed well and above what we've seen this season. And maybe there'll be some, you know, awkward conversations come the end of the season. But I totally agree with your point. They'll still have to go and do some serious business in the summer. There's no getting away from that. You know,
absolutely.
That was great yesterday, but it doesn't paper over the cracks that we've seen early in the season, where we know they're going to have to do something in midfield. Totally agree with Neil. They'll have to do a centre half. They just have to, I think. And I've always tried to get behind them, the likes of a Matip and Gomez, maybe when they've had poor performances. But there's almost too many of them now. There's this big bank of evidence that suggests those players aren't maybe going to... And in Matip's case, you understand why, because he's getting to a certain age. But in Joe Gomez, it might just be a consequence of all the injuries, and maybe he can't play two or three games in a week without looking very, very fragile. And maybe you've got to come to that reality and that conclusion. The manager will know more than us, but there's certainly a big stack of evidence that suggests that might be the case. So go and do a centre-half as well. And I think because of the Konate, will he always be able to play the games? They've got to get some of that stuff right. The amount of injuries Liverpool have had this season, by the way, is ridiculous. Something's not quite right there, I don't think. And you can get a bit silly with this and start looking into it too deep, but it doesn't feel like we should be having as many as we've had. So something maybe isn't quite right there. And again, I'm sure they'll look at it. And you get a real sense from the manager that he's up for this fight. He's up for a fucking big time as well. So I think come next season, people can write Liverpool Football Club off now, and some will. Some might change their mind on the back of yesterday. But I've got no doubt in my mind, with a bit of smart recruitment in the summer, you'll see this team right back towards the top of the table again.
And I think yesterday made that smart recruiter a lot easier. I think we were talking a couple of months ago about how if Liverpool don't get into the Champions League, it can't afford to derail all of our summer plans. It's too important. We can't say, oh, well, we didn't have that benefit. We can't do this or that. We have to try and do this or that anyway. I think games like that made it so much easier. Not just because, as Neil mentioned about Darwin Nunez and Cody Gakpo and seeing them there. There was another guy who Liverpool and Man United were both trying to buy called Jadon Sancho, who didn't even step on the pitch. He didn't even see game time. And you talk about how he's feeling right now. So any other prospective players out there looking at Liverpool, looking at Man United, all Rio's talk about this graph going that way and this graph going that way.
Everything Rio Ferdinand says about football is wrong.
It's wrong. Yeah. Absolutely everything.
It's a relentless track record he's got. It's the strike rate of a man I've never known. It is.
You know what, though? With Rio, it's all penance, because he grew up a Liverpool fan and he can't admit it now. And he's now in penance. He's now in debt because he has had to look back and he can't be honest with himself in the mirror anymore. And that's just sad, really, isn't it?
Well, and the fact that he's wrong about everything. Mm. I mean, I refuse to believe he can order the right breakfast for himself off a menu. Turns up, he's like, I didn't really want the scrambled eggs. Come on, Rio. What's going on there, mate? He's that wrong about everything. It's absolutely staggering. Fair play to him. It is relentless and it is marvellous. And it was marvellous yesterday for Liverpool Football Club. It's been a brilliant podcast. Thank you very much to Access Sport. As usual, accesssport.ac.uk/TAW. If you or anyone you know would want more information around everything that they do provide for young people right the way across the country. It was a marvellous podcast. The video aspect of it's been done by Sam Walkerdine. It's been produced by Andy Heaton, Neil Docking, Mo Stewart and Ian Ryan all rose to the occasion. Yesterday at Anfield was an act of love. Yesterday was the first step towards the next championship. That's the way this thing works. Whatever you're doing today, make sure it's a championship standard, because this podcast was. Sports Social Podcast Network.